great tone. Everyone can tell what it is, but how do you get it? With so many styles of music, with new gear coming out almost daily, what's the secret to great tone? Welcome to the Flow Guitar Enthusiast Radio Show, where we talk about tone, what it is, and how to get it. With your hosts, Jeff Floro and Scott Sill, we will talk to the creators of tone, the manufacturers, and the players, as we explore tone and the gear that gets it.
Tonight on the Flow Guitar Enthusiasts, we have a roundtable on cover bands and replicating other specific guitarist tones while in studio. With us, we have Jimmy Imperial, James Grover, Diego Russo, and Sean Colligan. Just remember, you still can't play Stairway to Heaven even in a cover band. It's just not allowed. The Flow Guitar Enthusiast is proudly sponsored by Sweetwater Music Instruments and Pro Audio and our good friends at Guitar Hummer at guitarhummer.com. And now here are your hosts, Jeff Floro and Scott Sill.
Good evening, everybody. Welcome to the Flow Guitar Enthusiast Radio Show. Sorry, I was having equipment hell. It looped and I hit the wrong button. My mistake. But we're here and we have a great show for you tonight. Real quick, though, Scott, how's being Papa?
It's being good. It's doing pretty good. Actually, I just wanted to mention real quick that for next week we have a legend coming in, J.D. Manis, who's a pedal steel player, so we'll have something quite unique there. He's played pedal steel on Eric Clapton's Tears in Heaven. He's coming in with his pedal steel, so he'll play live. And then I went and checked out the new Taylor T5Z, which is quite interesting. It does all kinds of different little sounds of humbuckers to single coils to mixture of acoustics. So
cool. Are you going to do a video on it?
No, I'd have to buy it.
Oh, okay.
I went and looked at it at a store.
Oh, you went to the store.
That's a lot of money.
Yeah.
They're nice, though.
Yeah, I'd have to buy it to do a demo.
Also, too, we just before the show, just to let everybody know, one of our sponsors tonight, Guitar Hummer, we just did a quick video. I brought in my Martin acoustic guitar. It's a newer Martin, and we're going to put it on the Guitar Hummer for a month. So I played a little bit. We videoed a little bit what's going on so you can hear the guitar before, and then we'll bring the guitar back in and record it again so you can hear the difference. And so anyway, stay tuned for that. It should be a lot of fun. But now let's get ahead into the show. It's going to be a real exciting one tonight because we got some great players in here, and this is truly a tone show. Let me put it that way. There's an aspect of music that we see. I mean, you know, that we talk about the big artists and that they're playing in their sound and stuff. Your Hendrix, your Page, whatever. And, you know, basically in the studio, they go in there, they experiment. Hey, this amp's kind of cool. This guitar is kind of cool. Let's develop the sound. But there's another aspect of guitar playing, whether you're in the studio or live, and we got people from both genres. And myself, I had to do a session where basically we were meant to do a sound alike, where we had a sound like this record. In my case, which the reason I'm going to share it with you, because it's probably one of the most unusual sound alikes I had to do, we were doing a record back in the days when they were doing exercise music for exercising. And we had to do a bunch of songs. The producer or the person that was doing the show wanted a specific set of songs. And one of the songs, this was back in the 80s, was Pac-Man Fever. And I don't know if some of you guys remember the game, but the little Pac-Man had a kind of weird little sound to it. Anyway, we were in the studio, and the guitar stuff was pretty straightforward. It wasn't, I was using some Fenders and Fender amps, and I got that clicky type of clean sound for it. But then we got a notice from the legal department. They said, you can't use the Pac-Man sound. And we had the game there. We were just going to record that and use that in there. So the girl that was doing the aerobics video, she wanted that she wanted that song. So I don't remember exactly how we got the sound, but I did end up getting it. And what I did was to get that little sound.
It was the 80s, folks.
Yes, it was the 80s. So anyway, it was a P bass, and we put the guitar over by the bridge. I used my pick, and I scraped it, and I got that Pac-Man sound. And they actually called and challenged us about it, and we showed them that it wasn't their sound, which they were kind of like, how did you do that? So anyway, great awesome. Moments in studio history, but that was my probably most unusual sound alike that I've ever done. But anyway, We are going to talk now. Let me introduce everybody that's here. Sean Colligan and Diego Rosso, they both work in a tribute band, an ACD band called Bonfire. So we know we've all been musicians that have played in top 40 bands. This is a little different because they're specifically duplicating that sound of that band. People come there because they want to hear as close to AC/DC as they can. So it's a much stricter type of thing than just playing top 40. Our other guest in studio is Jimmy Imperial, and he's played with Herb Albert, which is interesting. God rest his soul, Oscar Neves passed away, I think, about a month ago. I met Oscar, great player, but he was the original player for Herb Albert. And Jimmy's a studio guy. He has his own music that he's doing, too. He has his own albums. But we're going to talk to him a little bit about that and in his studio work, how he, you know, because producers will come in, I want you to sound like Page, or I want you to sound like Wes Montgomery, or I want you to sound. So we're going to take a look at that aspect of it. The third person we have is James Grover, and he's been on our show before. He is the tech for Kevin Eubanks that was formerly of The Tonight Show. But he's also been a session musician. He's worked with some other people that are pretty interesting, like Steve Morse, not a small name to drop with. But he, what's interesting, we're going to talk about that, too, because he was working with Steve Morse when he was working with Kansas and when he was working with Deep Purple. So there you got a big guy, Steve Morse, who has his own sound via the Dixie Dregs and his own solo stuff. He's called in to sound like the guy that was in Kansas and sound like Ritchie Blackmore from Deep Purple. So it's kind of an interesting broad spectrum of stuff where sounding like somebody and trying to get that specific sound is really important, and it's probably, I think, more difficult than just doing a straight, you know, session where you pretty much can define your sound. So anyway, I just want to welcome all you guys. It's just really cool. We've been having a blast in the front jamming and stuff, and it's just been great listening to these guys because I remember all these tunes, and it's really a pleasure to have you guys here. So welcome.
Thank you.
So first I want to start with Diego and Sean. You guys use the actual, you're using the actual amps that you're using the actual amps that that they're using, that AC/DC uses, or you do a tribute band for Led Zeppelin and also the Doors. How much is the equipment really specific? I mean, I'm pretty sure you've had situations where you had to do something where you don't have the amp. Like we were talking about Jimmy Page, he used a lot of different amps. And, you know, we wanted, you know, how much is that critical, or can you get the sound using something else?
Wow.
Well, I mean, to start off with, we do have the gear. I mean, the Marshall. I mean, between the two of us, we have 11 Marshalls, and they're from the 70s, anything from 71 to 77. Gretsch guitar, SGs, 412 cabinets with Celestion G12Hs. And we try and dial it in as close as we can. It's funny you ask about another amp, though, because we were out on the East Coast, and we got stuck with this little thing called a Marshall Hayes 40. And at first we were like, oh, no, what are we going to do? We're like, do the best we can. So we dialed it in, and someone took a video of us. It sounded just like us. But the bottom, this is one thing that I believe. A lot of people say, you know, oh, you know, it's all the... It's in his hands. But, you know, no one ever says this. It's not just in a guy's hands. It's in his ear. Mm-hmm. You know, like you were saying, anyone goes up, you know, Stevie Ray Vaughan or Hendrix, they go up and play through some guy's amp. And, yeah, but a lot of times they go up there and make the tone better. You know, they know how to dial in an amp. Yeah. And that's the thing, too. A lot of people wonder how we can go on stage and you play with 100-watt Marshalls, and how do you do it? How does it sound just like AC/DC? And, you know, we know you got to know how to dial them in. But I'll tell you one thing that's really important. Everything I learned about guitar tone was not from a guitar player. It was from a sound guy. It was from the guy that runs your sound.
Mic placement, too.
Mic placement is huge, you know. But, you know, it's a sound guy. Every night has to deal with tons of crazy guitar players that, like, dude, that's my tone. Just leave it like it is. And they don't sound good. And since I was a little kid, I'd wonder... Why does my guitar not sound like the record. So I started asking sound guys, why? First thing ever, well, you're too loud. So, okay, you know, volume. The first thing a guitar player should ask at sound check is, how's my volume? No one ever does that. They mm-hmm. read an article about Ted Nugent playing on 10, and they think that's great. I'm sorry, it's not 1969. You can't play on 10. You have to work with the sound guy. You want to be in the mix. My whole view is, I turn up to the level that the drummer is. If me, the drummer, the bass player are all the same level, then the front of house guy can just turn us up like a CD.
Right, right. Hold that thought for a minute. We're going to take a break, and then we'll be right back because I want to ask you something about the sound and also James Grover, because we were talking about this before with Kevin Eubank's setup. So just hang on 1 second. We'll be right back. There's a product out called Guitar Hunter that's designed to give you vintage sound without the vintage weight. We all know the more a guitar is played, the better the sound. Guitar Hummer is a guitar stand that simulates play by sending gentle vibrations through your guitar as it sits. Swap your guitar stand for Guitar Hummer, and in just a few weeks, you will notice deeper, richer tone and improved sustain. But don't take our word for it. Try it for 60 days, and if you don't notice a marked difference, return it for a full refund. Go to GuitarHummer.com for more information or to purchase.
Hi, this is Aaron Raby from Sweetwater, inviting you to come to Sweetwater.com to check out our fantastic 24-day holiday giveaway. Every day from December 1st to December 21st, we'll be giving away fantastic prizes, including full-blown home studios from Avid, Presonus, guitar rigs from Line 6, PA gear from QSC, guitars from Martin, digital drums from Yamaha, and much more. Check it out at Sweetwater.com.
We are back. Okay. Now, you were talking about using, you know, talking with the engineer about miking it. What I wanted to mention was you, James had said, I'm pointing to everybody, I got to remember we're on radio. James had mentioned that Eubank's amp that he has in the front, they don't use that speaker. They use the speaker off in the back of the stage and mic it. Now, do you guys, I know a lot of the big bands, they'll have a wall of Marshalls, but they only use certain ones. Even Cream had one as a backup, but he only used one stack. Do you guys mic off stage and to get your sound? Do you put the cabin in the back, or you're just basically it's all coming out up front?
We just use one mic straight into one of the speakers. Which one do we mic? The
G12H. Yeah. But the thing about it is, too, is you've got to find that mic placement. What's really a shame is a guy will go out and buy a $3,000 amp, and then he goes and plays, and the sound guy puts the mic too far off, and it sounds all muffled. We worked really hard to find that exact sound that we hear. And how you do that, I walk out in front of the sound system. Another mistake that people make is most guitar players, including pro guys, have never walked out front. You got to walk out front of the sound system at a sound check. Is that the sound you're hearing? Is you love your tone out front? It starts with that. It amazes me how many guys have never did that. You got to walk out front. If it's not right, I'll go and move the mic. And, I have tape on my, it's been there for years. It nails my sound. It's very important.
Mm-hmm. So you have a specific speaker that you mic to.
Yeah.
You don't, I guess on stage, you can't pull the mics back as much to try to get the voicing of the speaker.
Well, I have a cabinet that, I'll use a Marshall cab, but for the most part, I use a cabinet that's got the cross pattern green back and vintage 30s.
Mm-hmm.
We normally mic the vintage 30, but I've mic'd the green back before, and it still works. But we prefer the miking a certain speaker.
Yeah, it's interesting you say that about sitting in the going out in front of the audience and listening to speakers, because that's a problem. Friends of mine that are bass players. Because they would use, this one guy was using a dual 18s, he was using a Coliseum. And when you're like 15 feet or less or 10 feet in front of it on stage, you can't hear it because the wave is, the actual wave is about 20 feet, 30 feet. So you go outside and it's like, just bottom everywhere. And then, but on stage, so we ended up using a smaller speaker so he could actually hear himself, because he just kept turning it up and up. And it's like, you got to listen to what the balance is out there.
Well, I was going to say that one good thing about this gig is I get to go out into the audience during the show. I'll do that like maybe three times a show. You've seen this.
Oh, yeah.
Like
just typical Angus style. So I get off on being out there and just hearing the whole band, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And whereas these guys are stuck on stage, you know, they don't get to have that kind of...
I walk out the sound check, though.
But he'll do it during sound check with his wireless. And,
yeah. Oh, you guys aren't...
Well, it's funny. I bought a wireless only so I can go out and listen at sound check. Then I go backstage and plug a cable back in. I am that much of a fanatic about my tone. I bought a wireless just so I can walk out, hear my sound. Okay, we're good. Come back, and I take it off and plug a cable in. But just because it's 70s AC/DC, you know. But it's just very important to, you know, listen. And pretty much like what we're talking about, too, is I guess we're talking about, like, with us, is like hard rock guitar. But what's, because, you know, when you go out and see a band, if you see a country band, a funk band, a fusion band, usually the guitar sounds great. You never have a problem. It's always the hard rock guys or the metal guys that don't sound good. And the problem is...
Rely on that gain.
Yeah, too much gain, too much bass, too much volume. You know, it's like, and you know what's funny, what a lot of guys don't know, is the sound guy, if he cares, he puts a high pass filter on you at 125 hertz, and then the crowd doesn't hear all that low end anyways.
Yeah.
And so if he's going to put it on there, then, you know, why have it all? But I, like I said, I've learned everything from sound guys. You know, have some mids in your sound, turn down your bass, turn down your volume, you know, and communicate with the guy. You know, ask him some questions. These guys are pros, you know. If you have that type of sound check when you actually can ask questions. Our sound check now, it's like 5 minutes. You know, it's like, guitar, yeah, Sean, play your guitar. Sounds great. Thanks, Diego. Play your guitar. Awesome. I mean, this has been like this for years now. No matter what sound system we're with, it's and usually we go for our goal is to have the channel flat on the mixing board live.
Yeah.
I'll ask the guy.
Actually, that's a lot of recording artists try if they really know their stuff. A lot of times, the engineers don't have to do that much. But you know, speaking about you know finding your niche in the sound as an engineer and mixing, having done mixing. When you use a blowout sound like that, like a full blowout Marshall sound, it's really hard to get that to balance, like especially if your drummer's using a lot of cymbals and he's crashing those cymbals. You know, in a mixing situation, I would do specific EQ bands and filter out stuff to kind of get them in the pocket so you can hear it, but it doesn't, you know, you can still hear the cymbals. It's not fighting each other. Do you find yourselves doing that kind of thing live? Got a drummer that's just splashing all over the place. Do you adjust your guitar or the way you the speakers or whatever you're using? How do you find your niche, especially when you guys are using two full blown, you know, full Marshalls? Those are very, unless your amps are modded so they're different, and we can deal with that. But how do you get yourself to sound distinctive?
Well, you know, the thing is, though, is the guitar is a mid-range instrument. So, you know, we're going for mid-range. Our tone isn't too bright, and it's also not too low-endy. And we sit in the mix fine. That's what people love about us. You know, I just look at the sound guys, and I look at the smile in their face. The guy at the House of Blues in Las Vegas, he's like an older, classic guy that's run sound for years. And we walked in one day, he goes, you know what? For 6 months, I've been waiting for you guys to come here because, you know, he loves mixing. Yeah. It's that quick. You turn our channel level up, there's our sound. You don't got to do anything with it. So what I'm saying is, you know, someone like yourself or other sound guys have taught me, you know, the guitar has its place in the mix. So I'm not walking on the bass player, you know, with too much bass, but I'm also not walking up in the cymbals and the vocal. You know, they don't have to do anything to our tone, and I've worked really hard to just be a guitar player. I'm not trying to compete with the bass player or with the cymbals, you know?
Yeah. No, one of the guys that was a good lesson for me in mixing was Alan Parsons, because he'd have full choir, full orchestra, a bunch of cranked up guitars, like 6-7 vocalists, and you can hear everything. That's a sign of a good engineer. You can actually hear it all.
That's great.
Now, let me ask you, Jimmy. You working with Herb Albert, when you were doing that gig, did he have specific things that he wanted you to sound like? Did he give you a lot of direction, or basically you just went in and started playing?
No, basically we had to, well, definitely is a different type of band. We're talking rock, AC/DC rock, and it's, you know, that's pretty much I hate to say this, but balls to the walls, but you have to have tonality, you have to have clarity. Sean said it perfectly, you have to have balance. Well, in jazz and smooth jazz and R&B jazz, funk jazz, you have 9 guys to compete with, so you have to have a balance. Yes, you have to have that, you want that Steve Lukather Carlos Rios. You want that tonality to come out and still play rhythmically, jazzy, funky, and still. I played with a Tijuana brass and still sound like the 60s.
Yeah.
And
that's a distinctive sound.
Exactly. So you have to use a variety of guitars, tonality. You don't need a big amp. You need a small amp. One thing I did like what Sean said was perfectly clear. You have to rely on the engineer. Engineer is everything. Everybody has problems, but tone, getting the tone wise. But when you're in the studio, I mean, these guys have been doing it. And a friend of mine, my producer, said it's 75% musician that goes and plays that song, and it's 25% engineering. They are the ones that master it. They make that tone happen and ring out. Now, playing live is a different story because you want that live feel. You want to touch them. And so you have to have a great amp, you have to have a great guitar, and you have to play well, too. So, and everybody has to play together. So, yes, you do have to, you know, it's always been that way, and you know it since you were recording.
Yeah.
You have to be able to say, I need this tone, I need this feel, I need this. It's all about feel so we can get the song to sound the best.
Right. Well, we have a sample of some of his music, right?
Let's play a little bit of the Te Quiero is your single.
Te Quiero is my new single, and I'm playing the Wes Montgomery style octaves. But not so clean as Wes Montgomery with a 175.
A little more dirt.
A little more dirt, a little more, you know, new sound. I'm using the ES-125C model, hollow body.
Cool. Oh,
yes.
Okay, let's hear a little bit of that.
Te quiero.
Nice. I mean, I've never heard octaves that. It's kind of interesting hearing it that dirty. Yeah. What amp were you using?
A Wagner.
Oh, wow.
Yes.
And that's the amp. You're not using a distortion unit or anything.
Oh, no. Straight up. Like,
which model?
I used the, I think the was it the 40 watt? The smaller one?
And
there's a big. Yeah. Yeah, there was two of them. Daniel Aguilar at I-58 Studios. That's his pretty much his stuff. So I'd like to thank I-58. Daniel Aguilar, who graduated out of Boston Berkeley, is a guitar player. Also got his degree over there.
Oh, cool.
With Benny Falcone from A&M Records. So it's pretty much like I wrote the song, and the whole thing was to get this song in a Latin new groove and keep that Wes Montgomery jazz style happening, that big sound. It was a great production.
Yes. Yeah, the mix is great. You can hear everything. It's just crystal clear.
Yeah, at the end, you can hear the guitar solo. If you go to the end, you'll hear that influence of the Wes Montgomery, that fatness, and it's really pretty funky and full.
That is really a great sound. Now you're using an ES.
I was using for the lead. I use a ES-125C model Gibson hollow body. And for the rhythm, all those rhythm fills, I was using a Strat and a Tally, and a Telecaster. See, it's about everything. It's about coloring.
Right.
You know, these guys will tell you, Sean and Diego will tell you that, you know, the SG has a certain sound, the Paul has a certain sound, the Gretsch has a certain sound, and it's how you apply it that makes that, gives it that feel, that liveliness.
No, that's true. I mean, it. You can't. I've heard guys play, and people have said, like, for example, Jeff Beck. You can put a slab of wood in front of him, and he'll sound like Jeff Beck. And I know guys that you could give them any guitar, the worst guitar in the world, and they sound great. But you have to admit, when you have the right guitar, or you have a really good guitar, like I'm very jealous of Jimmy's guitar. This 345 is a beaut. But anyway, it makes it so much easier to get there. And if you can, if you have the chops and you have the guitar, you're, it's faster, at least for me.
And, you know, he probably had a lot of fun, especially in the first. I really enjoyed Jeff Beck in the first two albums he made. I mean, he's always great no matter what, but those two albums were very influential, I think, with all of us. Just that whole tone in that studio. I mean, he brought liveliness to his guitar, like Hendrix and Jimmy Page.
Yeah, he definitely.
Those are the icons. And of course, I'm not going to leave out Eric Clapton, which I love the with Cream. That's when I really enjoyed his guitar sound, and still do, of course. But you know, those were icons of the of America. Along with Jimi Hendrix, of course.
That's a given. But yeah, no, that's true. Those sounds that they produced were, and Beck was, you know, just to show how versatile he is. He's touring right now with Brian Wilson.
Yeah, he went into a blues mode.
I mean, that guy can go anywhere. Yeah. He just turns left, turns right.
So Jeff, since they all three have guitars here with them, should we have them do like a little 1 or 2 minute jam, and then we'll go into our commercials and come back?
Sure. All right. Well, we'll do that. We'll go to a commercial break and come right back. Just so we, before we start, Diego's playing my Martin. Sean has an SG, and Jimmy's playing his 345. Okay, go ahead and take it, and then I'll fade us out.
This is Aaron Raby, your resident guitars and amps geek at Sweetwater Sound, 1-800-222-4700, or catch us on the web at www.sweetwater.com. Today, Sweetwater and The Flow are proud to bring you a special segment dedicated to guitarists playing in cover bands. We'll be discussing the subject with some of the top guitarists in cover bands today. As you know, one of the toughest things of playing in a cover band is copying all of those tones. One of my favorite ways to do it is with a modeler. My favorite is the Pod HD500X from Line 6. Literally every tone I could need for a cover set, from top 40 to 80s to pop to rock to metal, all at my feet. Incredibly programmable, massively versatile, very ruggedly built, and best of all, it's incredibly affordable. At Sweetwater, we love discussing gear, and we'd love to help you find all the tones you need for your set. Give us a call at 1-800-222-4700. I'm Aaron Raby. Thanks for having us.
Do you want to get the best possible tone from your acoustic instrument? Guitar Hummer is a guitar stand that does more than just rest your guitar. It creates a gentle but continuous vibration that is equivalent to playing your instrument all day, every day. This concentrates years of seasoning into mere weeks, improving tone and sustain. You may not be able to afford a vintage guitar, but you now can achieve vintage sound. But don't take our word for it. Try it for 60 days, and if you don't notice a marked difference, return it for a full refund. Go to GuitarHummer.com for more information or to purchase. ¶¶
was great.
We are back. Let's talk to James for a minute here. So when you were working with Steve Morse, were you involved when they were in their rehearsals? Did you see what they were asking him to do and how he got his sound for Kansas and for Deep Purple?
Not really, because with Steve Morse, it was just really brief time with him. And the thing what he does is, I know he uses a lot of different boxes of effects for his tone. He goes on with a warm distortion sound with his tone, and it just sounds really nice to the amps that he uses. But a lot of stuff that he uses, a lot of custom stuff, so he gets that nice little fat sound. If you listen to Carry On My Wayward Son,
oh, awesome,
and you hear that riff, it just sounds so clean. It's not muddy at all. It's just like you hear all the guitar is just clean. With it's just, each note that he plays, he's just soloing, going, and when he goes, it just keeps clean.
When he went to Kansas and also Deep Purple, that's when he started using Marshalls.
Yeah, because
he used to use Ampeg amps.
Yes,
right?
Yes, Ampeg, and then he went to the Marshalls, and the Marshalls are more like that. He wanted to emulate the Ritchie Blackmore songs because he was pretty much covering up from Ritchie Blackmore, and a Ritchie Blackmore sound was more of a crunch than it was a distorted sound.
Right, but I think he still uses more Marshalls now than he's continued to do.
Yes,
that.
Yes, and I believe he was using Ernie Ball equipment stuff, guitars, Ernie Ball guitars.
Yeah, yeah, he has his own model.
Yeah, and stuff, and that's pretty much the stuff. But it was really brief when I worked with him, so it was real quick. Yeah.
Now, Jimmy, when you were playing with Herb Albert, what do you use? What's your amp setup, and what guitars do you use?
Well, I basically 335, 345, two Strats, a Tele. Basically, acoustic Yamaha nylon guitar, because he does play a variety of music. But I also used, back then, I had a custom amp called a Jim Kelly amp.
Yeah, I remember those.
Yeah, that was one of my sponsors, by the way, James at the day. but we used the smaller amps, the Yamaha, the Roland. But I went the other route. I went with JBL's cabinet, a solid back cabinet that... two JBLs, and also I went with the speakers I also used were, I think they weren't the Eminence, I can't remember back then, it was a long time ago, but mainly the JBLs gave me my sound, my clean sound.
Mm-hmm.
That's the type of what that genre of music...
Yeah, JBLs were real common.
Right, real common, and it sounds real funky, and then I used the Jim Kelly amp for my distortion stuff, so I had a dual switch amp system. So you can get that studio sound. You can't always get it with the pedals sometimes, you try, but basically...
That's true. Yeah. I'm crank the amp guy.
Yeah.
I mean, I have a lot of distortion pedals, and I love them, but...
Yeah, when you use the pedals, also use your signal. Your signal goes weaker.
Yeah,
so
yes.
That's what you gotta do.
So I use less signal. I use... I try not to rely on any pedals that much, only when I'm in the studio. Just try to get the solid sound. I'll go with a wah-wah pedal and a little delay... and mm-hmm. I have a Invoice compressor limiter that also works too, pretty good in the outside. But
now Sean and Diego, what do you guys use for your? Well, let's start this way. What do you use for the AC/DC? And then Sean, what do you use for the Zeppelin tribute? And what do you use for the Doors?
Okay.
Might as well go through the whole thing.
The AC/DC.
Go ahead.
Couple Marshalls. I mean, basically
which
JNT. I use a JMP 50 watt,
mm-hmm.
77, and it's amazing. I mean, it nails the tone. And my Gibson SG, it's just a standard. I think it's like an 03.
Have you used other
nothing vintage?
Nothing vintage?
No, it's
now. Let me put it this way: could you using like a newer Marshall? Let's say you got one. Like, were you using the Hayes and it worked? It's pretty easy to get that sound with the newer amps. The amps are good.
Well, in the beginning, when I first started playing with them, I had a 2000, and it nails it on the green channel. You get pretty close, but it's it's not the JMP, so it's it's like a newer Marshall. Or sometimes we'll play places where it's backlined,
that
little Marshall. We get 2000.
You can't use the high gain channel. You've gotta be on the clean channel and like a crunch mode. But the trick to any new Marshall: turn the presence on zero, get rid of the highs completely gone.
Yeah,
we give it mids. We don't make the bass too high. We have made 2000 sound
I could say they cut through in the mix. It's just it's not as warm as the old Marshalls we use, but right. You know, to the normal listener, it sounds good. But you know, getting picky, I'd rather use you know my 73 mm-hmm. Marshall.
Why don't we play a clip of theirs?
Which one do you,
you
want?
Know, hit the first one. It's Let There Be Rock. You know, okay. It's a 1973 and a 1977 on that.
Here's their Let There Be Rock.
Through Bombs and Jets.
Sounds pretty damn close.
That's pretty you good. Know, the other thing, too, is one thing someone asked the other day. I mean, we both, me and Diego, we both hit really hard with our right hand. I mean, you got to hit it hard. And we both play, you know, what's so funny, too, is people, when they think of Angus, Jimmy Page, Stevie Ray Vaughan, Eddie Van Halen, you think of them as lead guitar players. But guess what? The 98% of that song when the singer's singing, he's playing rhythm guitar. Mm-hmm. Eddie Van Halen. Yeah. Jimmy Page, Stevie Ray Vaughan, rhythm guitar players until they take a solo. It's very important. And so we play together well, and we hit it hard, you know, and you got to really, you know, that type of music, you know.
Are you using heavy gauge strings or light gauge?
I use 10s to 52s. So I use heavier bottoms, but, and I think he's about the same.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
10s. I was using 11s for a long time, but.
Yeah, I know you guys. I know you guys hit pretty hard because how long have I known? About 6 years I've known Sean here, mm-hmm. And one day at the show with his guitar, this Gretsch that's sitting right here, he was hitting really hard. And he popped the strings. He goes, "James, can you restring my guitar, man? I can get it." I remember he popped a couple of strings on stage.
Yeah, we beat the hell out of him. Yeah. You know, but it's part of the sound. You know?
But listening to these guys live is unbelievable. It's just you close your eyes and you're listening to AC/DC 1970.
Listening to the recording.
It's unbelievable.
It's pretty amazing. Now, Jimmy, you pretty much what gauge do you use on your guitars?
I use 10s.
Pretty much
tens,
all the way around?
10s and 13s.
Because we were talking about this earlier, and I have mentioned this before on the air in studio work.
Yes.
When you change guitars all the time, Lee Ritenour had told me this, that he would set up all his guitars, including his jazz guitars, to 10s. So that it was pretty similar feel because you got to change like right there and to go from light gauge to heavy gauge, it's really hard on your hands.
A lot of it depends on the action too, because I've used 13s and if the action is set right, I mean it sounds fat, it sounds thick, and you can get the same thing. But 10s can you pretty much go with 10s all the time. I mean I like 13s as well for the lead lines myself, and then on the lead solo, I like to use 10s.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? It's kind of like a preference.
Yeah. No, I it's easier to bend. The only one I use 9s is the Strats because the it feels similar to 10s on a Gibson. And I guess it has to do with the scale.
Yeah, I notice also like certain round wound strings that are compared to the flat wound, they feel a different texture when you play. So you can use a 10 regular strings or you use a 10 flat wound. Mm-hmm. The tension is a little bit more tense on the 10s than the flat wound.
And you could also tell the tonality, too, of it, too. That's mm-hmm. another thing that it really makes a difference, even at a low volume. And, you have to have that feel both ways. And I do use, for the blues, I use a Pro Head, Fender Pro Head with a slant cabinet, mini cabinet, with 30-watt Celestians, the old vintage ones. So
that's in the studio or live now? You use that?
No, I use that when I play live or in the studio, too.
Okay, you don't use the JBLs anymore?
Oh, I use the JBLs for the clean rhythm track, see? Ah,
you got me. I'm a diehard. I like Jubals. I'm a big Jubal fan.
Well, see, that's what we're talking about, tonality. But you have to have the guitar to you know, it's got to come through. We're talking tone both ways, amp and guitar. And, you have to use, for the blues, R&B, old school style of playing 60s and 70s. It is about, playing a Tele and a Strat. I mean, I think a lot of you, even for country or anything, I mean, it just has that twangy sound.
But you also have to point out, I mean, the higher the volume, the more you're going to have to drop the bass, you know.
Oh, yeah. So that's where your engineer comes in, huh?
Yeah.
Well, let me ask you guys, Diego and Sean, are you pushing the power tubes or are you pushing the preamp? Are you getting a more of a brown sound out of the power tubes, or what do you do?
You know, neither. I mean, I know that, let me explain. It's like we've kind of got the amps master volumes on them where we've never been told to turn down.
We're not that loud.
We're not that loud. You can talk over amp. I mean, we're not those guys that say, yeah, we just go there and turn it on 10, man. It's like people are amazed at our sound and talk on stage.
No, I understand, you know, it, but I mean, for example, that brown sound,
right.
The only way you get it really is to push the power tubes. So like we were talking earlier, one of my favorite classic Marshall sounds is Rockin' the Fillmore Humble Pie. But that's a plexi head, no master volume, fully cranked. Now, I mean, you can use power soaks and stuff like that to keep the volume down, but I mean, is your sound generated by the power tube distorting or the preamp tube distorting?
Well, it's a little bit of both. I mean, actually, both are happening. What's great is we can crack the master volume open enough where you got a full sound, but the sound guy's not telling us, you know, too loud. Because
right.
What a lot of people don't know, if you're too loud, you know, a lot of times the sound guy, he just won't say anything to you. You just won't be in the mix. And I've seen that where, you know, you got this dry guitar blazing off the stage, and then the rest of the band, there's a reverb on the vocal and the snare, and it sounds great, and he won't say anything to you. And, you know, a lot of people don't realize, no matter how big you think your sound is, it can't compete with a PA system. You know, when I'm at the House of Blues, I want to be in that PA. I don't care what people hear off the stage. I want to be in that huge system. And I'll tell you what, when they put that mic on my amp and they turn me up, it's thunderous.
It's such a joy for me to go out to the audience sometimes and just listen to us, out as an audience member. It's like, I'll come back on stage. You'll go, how does it sound? How does it sound? I'm like, amazing.
It's because we're in the mains. You know, we listen. The first thing I ask when I play a first chord is, how's my volume? And 99% of the time, the guy goes, oh, you're fine. With a look of amazement on his face. Because you can't.
Right.
We come in with stacks of Marshalls, and it looks scary.
Are you using only one cabinet, or are you using just one cabinet?
You just have the other ones for show.
Yeah,
that's pretty much show. I mean, the top cabinet, when a cab is boosted so in the air, you lose a fullness. I like that resonating, especially if you've got a wooden stage. It's the best. It's got to resonate off the floor. You know, the last time I plugged in a top cabinet years ago, it ruined my whole gig. It was thin and it's blasting. You're trying to sing in the mic and it's blasting.
You're using the straight cabinet to mic?
Yeah, only straights.
Oh, okay. You're using only straight.
Yeah, top end.
Because my friend has a stack, and he when he uses the half stack with the angle cabinet, that's usually what he uses when he plays. It does sound different when you use the two cabinets. There is a resonance there that makes it sound, you know, it gives it a little more mid range thump to it. You feel it in your chest. Now, you guys with the one cabinet, I know, like, especially like orange cabinets, those thicker cabinets, they have a much more mid-range punch to them. And I know the Marshall, Hendrix used those oversized straight cabinets on the bottom. He used the other ones, but those oversized ones had that sound. But you use all straight.
We use straight Bogner 4x12 cabinets.
Oh, cool.
With G12H, and then he's also got a cross with Greenback 25s. But they're
just built like tanks. I have an old Marshall 70s that I was using as straight, but it's
a different sound. So it's the Bogner sound.
Me too.
When I moved out here, I had four Marshalls, and after hearing the Bogner, I sold them all within a week and, you know, started getting the Bogner cabinets.
Right. Now, Jimmy, real quick, do you use more of the power tube distortion, or do you use, you control your distortion from your preamp?
No, it's power tube. Yeah, it's tube.
So you're using a small amp and crank it.
Small amp and cranking it, and with the fat cabinet, it gives me that warm sound. Even with my Strat and the 345 and the 335, they give you that at a low volume. They can give you that good breakup. You know,
I know what you're saying.
Yeah, it has a breakup to it, a certain tone that, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, we're almost at the end. What I want to do before we're off and before we jam ourselves out, because we got all these guitars here, they got to play. I want everybody, I'll start with Jimmy. Let's get information how to get a hold of you. I know you have a new single.
I have Violent Amuletos. You can pick it up on iTunes, and I also have a new EP out, also with a single called Te Quiero, which you just played.
Yes.
That has four songs on it. It just came out hot off the press. You can go to JimmyImperial.com. I have you can look me up on Facebook. I have also liked my page. I also have Instagram just came out. Yeah, really
there'll
nice.
Be pictures for tonight on Instagram.
Yeah.
Okay. No, that's cool. And then any gigs you're playing coming up that people might want to know?
You know, I am doing a small gig at an art place in East Los Angeles. It's called Shamaya, mm-hmm. and it's really a cool art gallery, very high end, but it's really neat in the heart of East LA. With Steven. That'll be... but that's going to be a private gig. I'm sorry.
But
just
anyway,
got me on that one.
That's okay.
But
no,
that's going to be like for just a private set.
Okay.
Close
set. And then Sean and Diego, give us your information.
We're in, mostly on all over Facebook. And but we do have a website. It's labonfire.com.
And is your Facebook because there's another Bonfire?
Yeah, there's
that's
why
Swedish banner.
Chicago, I think. Or yeah.
Well, all over, but there's that's why we have for the website. It's LA Bonfire.
LA Bonfire.
The other ones.
And then the album that we played the clip from, is that available?
It is on iTunes. What happened is the reason that was recorded is they took up until like last year to put their stuff on iTunes.
Right.
So a producer that had worked with their licensing company had talked to them about us putting this stuff up. So a kid in China or Taiwan, whatever, wants Highway to Hell. Well, he can't get it, and all he could get was kind of like a bad cover. So we tried to do an authentic duplication of it so you could buy it. So mm-hmm. That's why that was done.
AC/DC's only entered iTunes like a year ago.
Right, wow. People were used to buy ours, and that's why we tried to duplicate the sounds, because, like I said, if a kid wanted to buy it, or anybody wanted to buy it, you couldn't buy it. Unless you went out and bought the CD. But if you're
right.
at home, I really went Highway to Hell, you're not going to get it. So, we tried to duplicate as well as we
could. Okay, so that album's available on iTunes. Is it on Amazon? Is all your stuff on Amazon, too?
Amazon, iTunes, Google, and...
Everything.
Yeah, everything.
Same
yes.
with you guys?
It's just iTunes.
And then what are you guys, any gigs coming up? Anybody to keep an eye out?
Yeah, well, if you're in Vegas next weekend, this weekend coming up, Thanksgiving weekend, we're at the Cannery, Northside Cannery in Vegas, which is just an amazing place, an amazing sound and lights.
Both Friday and Saturday.
Oh, okay, cool.
Yeah.
Cool.
And the rest of the dates they can see at the Facebook page,
Okay.
And then afterward they're at the Spearmint Rhino.
Scott, what about the baby, Scott?
I'm not. I'm just saying that's what they'll do.
Anyway, we're already out of time, and obviously we just touched the surface on all this stuff, so we're definitely going to have all you guys back.
Oh, yeah.
It's a definite. It's a given.
Yeah.
It.
Yeah.
But
and James.
What I want to do on our way out, since you guys have all these guitars and you're playing some great licks, give us kind of a bluesy thing or something and take us out. And everybody out there, have a great Thanksgiving. Thanks for being with us. And next week, we'll have Pedal Steel.